This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by Manchester United legend Paul Parker and Dave Murphy. How are you doing, Paul? You all right?
I'm fine, thank you, Wayne. Saturday was one of those days that was, I think, drove me mad. And then I went and watched my local team play as well, and they got, in the end, well beaten by Fulham.
Yeah. Poor old David Moyes. Dave, how are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. Just kind of, started the week. Yay.
There's been hail in here in Manchester, which, you know, obviously middle of April, you expect that kind of thing, don't you? Hopefully we'll be joined by Paddy Barclay. He's planning to join us at some point during the podcast. So, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Paul might have to drop out at some point as well. So you might be left with Dave and I for a little bit, which, if you're not, dear listener, we'll try and keep our rambles to a minimum. Okay, if you're watching on YouTube, if you can get a like and subscribe, you can share the video as well. Really appreciate that. If you're listening on the audio podcast, if you can leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on, we would very much appreciate that. Bournemouth 2, Manchester United 2. I don't know. I put in my notes a tale of two penalties, really. It's much more than that. One given, one not. Tale, really, of an unbelievably poor United performance again. And I say unbelievably, despite the fact it was, in fact, very believable and expected. The unbelievable aspect is probably that the penny hasn't dropped with either the manager or the players. Bruno Fernandes for the second week in a row, probably with one of his more impressive captain's performances. But other than that, very, very poor, very difficult to find any positives in it. Paul, what did you make of that? I mean, United definitely got away with it. They didn't deserve to get a point, but they've definitely got a point more than what they deserve for the weekend.
Oh, I mean, it was incredible, really, how Bournemouth didn't go in, I'm going to say, a minimum of, I'm going to say 4-1 up. I'm going to say 4, but I think others can dispute that, to be perfect, because it dispute it being higher than what it was. And it was reminiscent of the performance against Liverpool, to be perfect. It's in that sense of everything that went around it. I just can't explain it. The defending was doing my head in. And lucky enough, I was actually working, because if I was just sitting and watching it, I would have been saying things about somebody defending just people not wanting to do other people's jobs, just people looking after themselves or maybe not knowing what they're doing. I'm seeing a young lad playing. I don't see anyone communicating with a young lad, you know, just telling him to hold. He was, Solanke decided he was going to go up against him, the young lad, believing he could bully him and get something out of him. And he'd done exactly that in the end. He bullied him, but he didn't get any help. Didn't see Harry Maguire even try and swap sides and saying, I'll do it. And if Solanke was to move again, you think, well, Solanke's playing the game now. But it never even happened. It never saw anyone taking responsibility. Gallo, People kept trying to make him out as the best right back in the Premier League. When you use the word right back, it kind of involves one of the major things in defending. Know your positions. Every time I saw him, he was chasing back. He had Garnacho in front of him. He never organised him. He weren't demanding enough from him as a young boy. Demand things from him. Let the lad know. There used to be a saying, you've got to earn the right to play when you go away from home. More so being Manchester United, because it's everyone's cup final. They never earned the right at Bournemouth. They allowed them to play. They never got stuck in. Never done the hard yards. And Dalot allowed Garnacho to only go one way. Never made him come back. I put that 100% on Dalot. And if the young boy is not doing it, and then that's when the manager senses it, sees it, or whatever, and it's dealt with. Dalot never done enough on that right-hand side in that first half. Everything they've done. The lad, Kirkez, has never, I mean, I've seen him play a few times. That was about his 18th start since he's been there. That's mostly his best ever game. He should have had a hat-trick. How many times did he get to the corner of the six-yard box and lose all his composure? Yep. So, I mean, in the end, I think they called him Jigsaw in the end because he breaks up in the box. It was just absolute... Well, I mean, I'm just saying there, you've asked me one question, Wayne, I could carry on. But it was just, the first 45 minutes was a disgrace. Was worse than Liverpool because the fact of it was Bournemouth, it was doing exactly the same as Liverpool.
Yeah. What about the second half?
Second half, it was still poor. Bournemouth started well when they allowed Manchester United a bit of freedom. But they still weren't good enough to grab it, still didn't pass it. The penalty... I'm saying that's a penalty because he's moved his arm. If his arm had stayed there, I would have kind of gone, no, not where it was. But because you see him move it out and you look at the reaction the player after, you know, he knows what he'd done. He shouldn't have done it. But it's a human reaction to do that, yeah. That close. But yet so far to know, listen, at the end of the day, and he's mostly said to himself, why didn't I let that go? It was only Marcus Rashford. Why didn't I do that? That's mostly what he could have said. Like I'm being a bit sarcastic there, but still, you know, I mean, I say that's a penalty. On the other, at the other end, I think that's a penalty. I really do. Now, I know it's up Campbell. I think it's, but I look at it. He's grabbed hold of him, and his foot. I mean, I'm going by what I saw on the TV. There's mostly been angles which they're not showing anybody, which is wrong. But for me, and I know if you're touching that line or anything, it's a penalty. And that seemed like a penalty to me, without a doubt. I don't know. The referee's given the penalty. And I don't know what the ruling is. Someone said the other day that once he's given that ruling, whoever VAR, they can't come back and do this and do that. I don't know what they can and can't do. But I saw that as a penalty. If it had been given, I'm sure that a lot of people would have said, well, yeah. But again, Kambala, he was a little bit caught out, put his arm out. If he stands still and Ryan Christie runs into him, then it's not a penalty. His feet are grounded, as far as I'm concerned. The lads run into him. You know, back in the day, they might have called obstruction, but that's not a penalty. His feet are grounded, but because his arms are there, that made it difficult. That made it maybe difficult for the referee, but... Be it that penalty that wasn't given and the one that was given, the referee was shocking.
Yeah.
His decision-making and some of the fouls he was giving, which he knew, it was just embarrassing for both teams. The referee was terrible. I haven't seen him before, to be perfectly honest, so it's going to be a fun-filled few years of watching this referee again. So, no, I mean, it wasn't good. It was a poor 90 minutes. But I think everyone's used to it. Is, you know, what's it, 7 more Premier League games to go from? You just want them over and done with as quick as possible now, just to find out what's going to happen next.
It's a quarter of the season that you're wishing away. Like, I remember the things, you know, obviously the on this day kind of thing pops up every now and again, and every day mostly. And in 2001, I know it was the earliest that teams won the league. but the game that we played against Coventry and we won 4-2. And Giggs scores the header like towards the end. Then we don't have anything to play for the last few games. That's one thing, but this is, you know, having a quarter of the season, like almost a quarter of the season, but it has been effectively a quarter of the season. And you look at the other games, like, you know, Spurs losing, I know Villa won, but the opportunity has been there to close the gap so many times over the last few weeks, and United have just gone, and we've seen it before, meandering, like, oh, we're out of it. And, like, they should be in that game mindset, because every game is, like, still there, and it says the same kind of thing, that it's a cup final for the opponent, so United should be playing up to that. They don't, they just sort of, again, yes, on Saturday, fall apart. I mean, my view on the penalty, I thought the first one was a horrendous decision. I didn't think it was a penalty, but I know from the professional aspects of his moves on towards it. Thought, yeah, all right, I can accept that. I'd be upset if it was given against us. And the second one, I felt like, I did think it was more to do with obstruction, but I think like he knocks it around him and sort of runs into him trying to play for the penalty. And fair enough, I mean, sometimes those kind of things will happen, and it is obstruction. It's that close that that's how fouls are given and won. But I did worry about his foot being on the line, but I thought, like, if you're giving a penalty for that, you're going to give penalties every single week, because and they do for all kinds of stuff. I mean, there was something earlier in the game where he'd given a foul in the box, and one of the players had barely even touched him. It was like an obstruction for a run across, and it was like he. I think he bottled it because he'd seen the corner. Maybe he shouldn't have given the corner. And I really dislike these referees, like two wrongs for a right and things like that. But, you know, I don't think United came out of it badly on Saturday at all. By any means, I think, you know, the decision aside, we were definitely lucky to get the ball. Dave, what do you reckon to the game? I mean, we've seen some bad ones, and obviously that's not a good one, but where do you place it in the context of time running out of this season?
Yeah, I think it was pretty shocking. It really was. It was like, you know, when end of season, just, you know, let's fill in these 90 minutes. We won the league. It was that kind of attitude, even though we're seventh. A couple of things from the game. I think Paul hit the nail on the head. You know, why Harry Maguire didn't help Kambala out more, because it was clear that Solanke went into that game thinking, you know, this lad's a kid. I'm gonna show him what it's all about. He got no help. It was a poor performance. I think he grew a little bit into the game as it went on. But United were just terrible, absolutely terrible. And you know, coming away with a point. It was similar to like Brentford a few weeks back. You know, that's the positive we can take from it, because we didn't deserve anything from either of those games. One of the other things that I wanted to hit on was the performance by Garnacho. I mean, that was probably the worst 45 minutes I've ever seen him play. A lot of the problems stemmed from him just, I don't know, he was having a brain fart every 2 minutes. He was just disappearing. He wasn't tracking back. And then, you know, the uproar over it on social media after the fact, that Ten Hag took him off at halftime. It blows my mind. It's like, well, you're not watching the same game as I was, because I thought Garnacho was really, really, really poor. And he deserved to be taken off. You know, if you don't take the player off when he's playing bad, you get criticised. You take the player off for being bad and you get criticised. It only seems to happen to our club. But it was a very poor performance. On the penalties, I definitely thought it was a penalty for us. I really did. He did move towards the ball. And in doing so, that's the letter of the law, is a penalty. You know, if he had a stood still and had it just hit him in the chest or whatever, or hit him in the upper arm, he probably would have got away with it. But the fact is, and you can clearly see, he did move towards it. And that prevents the ball from passing him. So their penalty... I would have been disappointed if it was up to the end and we didn't get it. I think it was a penalty. I think the referee was so poor. He was just trying to right the wrongs that he had done throughout the game for United. And like you said, you know, two wrongs don't make it right. But a lot of these referees nowadays, they trip themselves from one problem to another and then try and rectify it through a game, which is like, which is shocking. But it was another poor performance by United. I just don't know what, I can't put my finger on it. It's like, it, like you said earlier on, it's like as if the players have just said, you know what, season's over, you know, why do we care?
Let me, I'm going to ask you, I'll come to you straight on this one, Paul, Dave, but I'm just going to go through some of the comments there that we've got from Johnny and Patrick. Johnny says, I've seen this video going around of Ole with Ten Hag and Ajax discussing Ten Hag's tactics, saying how he prefers midfielders pushing up because he thinks risk is worth the reward. Explains the current massive gaps and ease for teams getting shots on goal. On a similar note, but not referencing that video, Patrick says, how much of our current issues are about ability versus mindset. I ask because I'm still conflicted about whether a new coach, whether it's Motta, Alonso, or even Pep, would get to play better, consistently kick the ball, keep shape, structure, close down, etc. And this is a point, right? You know, 2 years ago when we had Rangnick in, and we saw even under Ole, I mean, look, there's one argument here, and it's a good argument, by the way. You know, I'm someone in the Ten Hag in camp, you know, but the good argument is that Ole took a lot of these players to second place. And they didn't look anywhere near as cavernous in the whole of midfield than what they currently are. The system, you could say, creates this black hole in midfield. But then you've got the quality of midfielders, which is obviously a lot better at the moment, like Manu, Fernandes and Casemiro, objectively a lot better at doing that job than what Fred and McTominay were 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago. So United have now advanced to have the better personnel there, but the problems still remain. So is it systemic? Is it functional? You look at the manager and you said that he's unable to get that out of him. I mean, Dave, I mean, it's an interesting theory to look at because, I mean, by and large, I'll look at the quality of defence and say, well, the defence can't do the same thing as the first choice defence does, right? And every good team is built on its defence. If the second choice defence has got a quality gap to it, then that is currently just the first, and you've got to ask it to do things differently. It does impact the entire team now. Obviously, I say that every single week because I think it's still people forget that from a week to week basis. But then I guess the secondary point is considering that Ole got us to a second place with some of these players, and the quality of the league's still pretty poor, like they're. That's not an unreachable objective. You then got to think, the question is fair, should Ten Hag be doing better with the quality that he's got?
I personally believe he should be doing better. I really do. Some of his in-game decisions have left me scratching my head. Some of his substitutions. I mean, it's not the worst game in the world to play, to be constantly putting pressure and attacking and being on the front foot, but you need those players. Unfortunately, even though on paper it looks like, you know, we have a much better team midfield with Casemiro, Fernandes and Manu, Casemiro doesn't have the legs. And Fernandes, you know, at times just runs around a lot. You know, he seems to be a little bit scatty at times, at least with McTominay and Fred, although, you know, you don't want them as your two main midfielders. You got discipline from them most of the time, and they were up and down the pitch. So I know you've asked a question earlier on about, you know, how did it work with Ole with these players, and it's not working. I think that's the main reason. You're not going to get a hell of a lot of stylish football out of McTominay and Fred. And I'm still baffled why we got rid of Fred and spent all that money replacing him for a player that hasn't even played. I know he's been injured, but when he has, it makes no sense to me why we got rid of Fred to bring in someone else like that. It's baffling. I just don't think, you know, if he wants to play that game, he currently doesn't have the players. He has one out of three players that could possibly play that. I just don't, you know, we all can see that Casemiro doesn't have the legs anymore. He's not going to get up and down the pitch. And even his passing has deteriorated over the past couple of months. He's another one I think we're going to move on in the summer. But Fernandes as well is kind of a bit of a, he never stays in the one position. And you know what? There's times I love him from that he pops up everywhere. But it's not going to suit the style of play that Ten Hag wants. So it is it is baffling that he's still trying to play that with the current players that he have. I mean, it's like, buying Peter Crouch and Niall Quinn and not crossing the ball in. It just makes no sense. If he's still consistently trying to play that game, we don't have the players for it. And I mean, I did see the video of Hullet and Ten Hag, but I don't know how old that video is. You know, is that his mindset today of how he wants to play? Or did this video happen in the last year or two, or is it one from 5, 6, 7 years ago? Because managers change their philosophy, you know, and based off the players that we have, like I said, it's a little bit crazy to think that he wants to play that way when he doesn't have the players to play that way.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at it sometimes, and it does look like it's the amount. I mean, Paul, you were saying earlier about, like, no, I mean, the common complaint Saturday night was that there was nothing at right back. The issue was that we did have a right back and we had a right sided player, so we did have the players on the pitch. So what were they doing? They can't have been doing what the manager wanted them to do. I know that Dallo likes to play this sort of inverted defensive midfield role, but we look at Campbell's position and he was like, I said it last week on last week's pod, that when you put junior players in, don't expose them. You make sure that they've got senior players around them. And I mean, yeah, all right, Dallo is doing somewhat what he's asked to do, but in the same way, he's also letting down a teammate. And it's, I think this is the thing that always confuses me. Like, we've talked about the high-fiving and back-slapping, but it always feels like it's a selfish thing because it's like, oh, it's a thing that I've done right. You know, I know last week you were saying Campbell did it and he sort of pumped himself up. Well, just as well, because there's no one else around him to help him out on the other night. I felt so sorry for him when he made the error, because you're thinking, all right, he's made the error. That happens to every player. It happened to Kobbie at West Ham. We see that. And, you know, players will learn from that. They're, in fact, errors are necessary. But you look at how that error could have been avoided, and the finger isn't pointed at Campbell, it's pointed at everyone else around him, you know, and that's not fair on him. Then, but I mean, on the bigger picture, Paul, is about whether or not we've seen the maximum of these players. Are we seeing as good from them as Ten Hag can get? Or do you think that even he's now, we can look at him after the evidence of the season so far? I'll just come on to this point from Johnny, because he's just referencing Dave's point there. He says the video was in 2019. Doesn't have the relevance that managers can change. However, current midfield issues lead me to think of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I've seen this. I do see the comparison, because the midfielders do all push up, especially when the goalkeeper's got the ball. It's like we've got seven players trying to mark their defence and no one's opening themselves up for balls. Paul, the overriding question is about whether the managers, at this point, he should have a better plan B. Should he have looked at the ability levels of these players, know what Maguire can and can't do, know that he hasn't got a left-footed player, so he can't have that balance on that side of defence, and come up with a better alternative than what we're seeing? Because we're seeing it every single week. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, you're right. He should come out of a better.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Better idea when you're still trying to play out in that fashion which everyone feels they must do. I don't know where, you know, what's happened to taking responsibility yourself and deciding that you're not going to play that way because you haven't got the personnel on that given day equipped to do it. And it doesn't seem to be that way when you've got someone like Wan-Bissaka, not his strongest on his left side, and he's doing a decent job out there, to be fair to him. He's doing decent. He's doing what he's good at, first and foremost, is defending. Anything other than that is a plus going forwards. And you look at Harry Maguire, who's never had a left foot, is always under pressure when he has the ball. There's this, don't know, this thing about him being good on the ball. He gets it and he just kills. If you want to move anything quick, you don't give it to him. It's as simple as that. And you've got a young boy playing to the right, and then you've got a right back who is, as you mentioned, trying to be inverted. Didn't need him being inverted. You're away from home early on. Stay in a given position. Make sure you're around for anything that goes over Cambala's right shoulder so you get to it first, not dragging him out. Yeah. He had Solanke, as I mentioned earlier.
Everything went there. All of their attacks.
Yeah. Because they spotted a weakness. The manager didn't have to be too clever, but he knew he had a right side midfield player after 5 minutes, didn't want to track back. He sent the left back on and go and test him, see that if he wants to work. Found out he didn't want to work hard. He knew that he had a Dalot, doesn't really know his positional sense marking that side, went missing on a young boy. On the goal, the first goal, where was Harry Maguire? Should have been closer. Left a big gap between him and Cambala through the middle. So when Solanke, in the end, gets around him when he slips, which no one plans to do that, where was the second man to help him? Nope. The shot from the distance, he shot. I wonder, the keeper was a bit deep, in my opinion. Sitting them made it easy for Solanke to score. It might as well have been a penalty. The way that it went, it was poor. But there is a problem with what the manager wants to do. And sometimes you do have to change. And you're talking about that big hole in the middle and Casemiro, and he wants to play. But the one thing, there's a style, always about styles of play, and everyone's about doing this and doing that. But the one thing that should be easy for everybody, doesn't matter what team you play at any level, maybe unless you drop down to really kids and seven aside and that, is that you move together and you're tied to string. You're tied up with a bit of string and you do that.
Yeah.
Left, right, and they don't do it. The moment the midfield players go forward as they are trying to join in, you're looking then for a centre half, fullbacks to screen, squeeze, leave people behind. Yeah. That's what you do. You kind of jog, you semi sprint, you get up behind the midfield in case they have to stop and turn round. And normally you watch the teams that have been successful this season at any given level of where they are in the league. The moment a lot of them go forwards when they're looking to go and gain something, the moment they stop and they turn, they pass it somewhere, but they're not going 20, 30 yards back to start again and lose that momentum. The centre-halves or the full-backs are directly behind them or made an angle off of them. Manchester United don't do that. And I keep saying it, and I've said it to you, Wayne, now. And I don't want to say how long, because it just gives me nightmares that he's been at the club that long. Since Harry Maguire's been there, that gap's always been there. The difference is that more with a McTominay and with a Fred, there was more energy in the middle. Yeah. The problem was when they had the ball, and time was the problem. Yes. Now, everyone's to say it, and Dave's has said it, Casemiro's legs are gone. His legs, he isn't what he was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, but there's still that in there. And the problem is the gap in that middle, and you throw anyone into a gap that big and you haven't got the ball and you've got to go left to try and get it, but you're going to go right, you're going to get tired quite quick, physically and mentally. Mentally, you're not going to want to keep doing it after a while. And when you do get the ball, you're mentally tired because you're telling yourself, if I give it there, he might lose it. I've got to do that. So there's negativity running through Casemiro's mind and his body because the gap's that big. If he had someone, a centre-half, like I'm going to have to name him, the Argentinian, Martinez, whatever you call him, if he was there, he would shout because he wants to join in. So when he joins in, he wants his other compatriots, his left-back, he wants his right side centre-half and his right-back to make sure they're with him in case he gets in a bit of trouble. So he needs help from his unit because he wants to help the unit in front of him to make sure that they help the unit in front of them. Yeah. They're not together. They're playing as individuals, a lot of them. And that's the reason why United look bad. It's not because of people's legs are gone or this and that. It's because They're not a team. The manager, the one thing, if you ask somebody, we're going to go on a 5-mile run, there'll be quite a few players who go bang. There'll be other players who just jog.
Yeah.
And managers will accept that. But they're waiting to see what they do at the weekends or what they do in the midweek. Yeah. And if they suddenly see that, then they pull them up saying, you're not driving yourself forward and pushing. I'm not giving you a time. I'm asking you to run 5 miles. I'm not saying it's a race. I'm checking to see what you've got in there. You know, are you going to drive? Are you going to compete against someone else? And the answer to a lot of them, they don't want to compete. They want to take part without competing, Wayne. That's the problem.
It's a very interesting thing. Because I don't know if anyone remembers. We say a lot of things on this podcast, obviously, but one of the things we were talking about a year ago was the value of putting in younger players into this environment. And one of the drawbacks we were saying was the environment is too selfish for those players because they won't be given the opportunity to thrive in it and they'll sink. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that about these players so far, but I think when you look at stuff like, you know, Garnacho's post on social media because he's been brought off, because he's been emboldened to believe that he's untouchable within a short run of games. Don't get me wrong, he's been one of the shining lights of the season, without doubt. And, you know, his career trajectory is probably very high, and I hope that it is. But the point is that he's already been sort of enveloped in this selfishness that he's got to protect himself. So he's going to call out the decision or other players because he knows that his performance is as much about the 10 players around him as it is about himself and the opponent, obviously. But he's a communal thing. So where it's easier to point the finger, and it is easier to point the finger, then you don't have the responsibility. And for Garnacho, yeah, he's a little bit untouchable, with the response being that he's so young that you can expect inconsistency. But you look at Cambuola, very the case in point is made there by there's no one around to help him. Mm-hmm. There's no one taking senior responsibility to say, well, we're all in this together and we're going to help you. Mainly with the weekend. I've said this on maybe the last two podcasts. I'm not calling out individuals, but you can see it happening in passages of play. He's been sent medicine balls. It's like, all right, well, you can get us out of trouble now. You're better at being able, you're the one with a good reputation in midfield, so you get us out of this. We'll play you into a position where you can't do anything. So he loses the ball because he doesn't have the experience to get out of it. But this is what I'm saying, is an endemic problem within the squad. And we were talking about this a year ago. The worry of putting them into that environment is that you see things like this. Instead of them, those players coming in as they were in the first few games, elevating everything, everyone stepping up a notch. When the chips are tough, when things are down, you know, things aren't looking good, it's a squad that goes into itself and looks like they play like individuals at the weekend. And it's so weird because we've seen, and I guess maybe it's to do with the injured players coming back, Paul, you mentioned Martinez as the perfect example of it. There's a unity there. There is a unity there that exists when those players come back. And Ten Hag's big responsibility, if he's got a long-term job at the club, is to weed out those individuals because you can't. That's the culture that rots your team and rots your squad. And, you know, there's a bigger picture. Is he able to move those players on? Does he have the ownership backing to be able to transition those players out and bring ones in, because you still need to bring senior players in? But I think what we're seeing is the rot of all of that. And it's, we've seen it, we're familiar with it, and to see it again is not very pleasant. Okay, so you could say romance is dead with United challenging for the Champions League, and romance is dead in the title race. You know, Manchester City's reserve team losing at home to Aston Villa yesterday. So City's first team have got a run on the title. You know, in usual days gone by, you would look at two of the contenders at the top of the league losing at home and say, oh, that's a turn up in the title race. City are going to stroll away with that now, like 5 years ago. So if you take City out of the equation, I know it's a stupid thing to say, but it looks like a competitive league. It's so uncompetitive that they're going to walk away with it now. So increasingly, week by week, it looks like Manchester United are going to be the team who have got the responsibility of stopping them winning the treble. Again, the rerun of your worst movie is being aired, unfortunately. you know, United have got this whole narrative going on though, Paul. I talk about romance being dead. You still want to cling to the fairy tale in sporting narratives, football, things like that. You know, there's been a running joke I've been putting on social media with the pressure that Ten Hag was under. Was, oh, this is whenever we scored in the FA Cup, when we scored at Wigan, when we scored at Newport, oh, that could be Ten Hag's Mark Robin moment. And then we play at Forest, and then Casemiro scores in the last minute, and I say, oh, that could be Ten Hag's Mark Robin's moment. And then Ahmad scores in the last minute of injury time, extra time against Liverpool, and you go, oh, that could be his Mark Robin's moment. And then we come up against Mark Robin's team in the semi-final, Coventry. It should be an easy game. You expect that United will play down to their level and it'll be closer than what it ought to be. You still think United ought to qualify. But there's a bigger picture thing now, isn't there? I mean, it's hard on Ten Hag that his first 2 years at the club are in this very uncompetitive league environment where City are going to win, probably they've got a very good chance of winning two trebles. And he's United manager heading into this. I mean, I don't even know. I'd never say it's better to lose in the semi-final and give Coventry the chance of doing it in the final. Who wants to see a 10-0 FA Cup final? Although we might still get that with us. What do you reckon about the weekend? Do you feel like, you know, with this subplot of, like I'm saying, the Mark Robbins moments, the number of times that, you know, the pressure that Ten Hag's under to keep his job and the fact that you've got Forest in the cup run, you've got Mark Robbins himself in the semi-final, does it mean anything?
Well, of course it does. It's still a trophy, and Ten Hag needs a trophy. If he does end up losing his job, today could be an LVG moment, couldn't it? After the cup final, it could be that moment again. But I don't think the club could ever do that again in that way. But I'm saying that, never say never. It's football. But Coventry is. Well, everyone know, I think the majority of football, it's really Coventry are a good side. Coventry have got a better midfield.
Yeah.
They're more fluid. They pass the ball. It's as simple as that. So if you don't close them down, they'll move all around you. They've got a decent forward line in Hadji Wright and Ellis Sims, a decent forward line. Sims is just one of them, a battering ram, keeps going. He'll miss, and he'll keep going and going. Yeah. Like that in the way he plays. He's like another Brian McClair. He'll make something. You'll think, well, I got that bit right. I'm not changing. And he'll go and look again to go and get it right again. He won't go missing. They've got a decent midfield. I don't know if O'Hara will play in midfield, because I don't think he's going to renew his... O'Hare or O'Hara, one of the two. I don't think he's going to renew his contract. So Mark, being Mark, is what he's like. He's not been playing him. He's been pulling him off the bench a few times, but he's a fantastic little footballer. Defensively, they're not bad. And as you know, that Championship is the most competitive league in the country. Maybe the most exciting league in the country, to be perfectly honest. So it's a real tough game that they've got. I'm sure that it's easier to go up against Chelsea than what it is Coventry, because Coventry have got a little bit unknown quantity about them. Quality. So I expect United to win, but it's going to be so difficult, as every game, Wayne, every game they play, when people say they should be doing this, I go, no, they shouldn't be doing anything at the levels they're at the moment. They should be competing and working hard, which should be a guarantee, but they can't guarantee that. I had that feeling that the last game was going to be like it was, because it was after another Liverpool game, and a lot of those players could not lift those... They'll get to those emotional levels again, because they needed a crowd. They needed to be at Old Trafford with a 70,000 odd people behind them to get them going in a game, and maybe make them feel they've got to work hard to go away to Bournemouth or away to Brentford. They couldn't do it because they haven't got that mentality. Have they got the mentality to go into something where they're virtually been told already they should be in the final? So really, they should go there, making sure they go and do it, and not want to suffer the embarrassment of being beaten. Because how good I've talked up Coventry, and everyone else does, in black and white, Manchester United got beaten by a Championship side to miss out on a cup final spot is what's going to be remembered on Monday. Everything else goes out the window. So those players, and I don't know how he's going to do it, and I'm hoping that he can find somebody who can want to go out there. I wish Johnny Evans was fit, to be perfectly honest, fit enough to play. I'd rather see Johnny Evans start in a game like that with Kambala, to be honest. I know that Johnny Evans would lead him and help him, and he would control the back line. Dallo, as I mentioned, done well, but playing for himself, playing totally for himself. So whatever he gets out there, and just on my little bit, just about, he hasn't been mentioned, and I've got to go shortly, is Fernandez. I thought Fernandez was incredible. I saw him everywhere. I saw him tracking back where he ran past other players and took the ball off the toe of someone just in front of his 18-yard box. I thought what he put in there was absolutely incredible. Dave's right about him. He's very undisciplined in everything he does. In those kind of games, he's always there in the forefront, without a shadow of a doubt. But the games that you want to see him in and have that control in the bigger games and get hold of the ball and then make things happen and talk to people as a captain, that's the games where he needs to find him. That's the games he needs to find himself. These games, that was a captain's performance when you're seeing and you want other people to follow.
Yeah.
But I saw those kind of performance in a Fernandez, and I saw that in the likes of a Brian Robson, a Roy Keane, and a Paul Ince. All week, doesn't matter, whatever game that was always the levels they was always playing at when things weren't going right. They'd done those kind of things, and it was up to us as people around them to make sure that we got as close to those levels as possible. There wasn't enough players who followed on from that. And that would have embarrassed me as a fullback. It would have embarrassed Brucey or Pally if one of those three was running past them and doing their job. I don't think it affects a lot of these players. I really don't think it affects them.
No. Well, if Paul's giving praise like that to Bruno, then, you know, it's fair. We've given him enough stick on the podcast. But there you go. If Paul drops out, he drops out. I'll ask Dave the question about the semi-final against Coventry. Great comment made by there about Coventry's expectations. So it's Sims has been great in the cup run so far. And I think about, not many people would think about it, but the last time United played Coventry in the cup, in our cup, we lost 2-0 against them at Old Trafford in the League Cup in 2007. We've just become league champions as well. Much better United squad than this one. You have that danger. I know Paul was saying there about the individuals, right? You got the feeling that United could be undone by everyone trying to score the perfect goal on Sunday day. You know, they think there's going to be a walkover. So everyone's looking for that highlight reel. And you can see that happening with this United team. That's a very real danger.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. And, you know, I've always said it as well. And I know Paul mentioned earlier on, the Championship is one of the toughest leagues in Europe, I believe. It's very competitive. There's a lot of good teams in it. And Coventry are going to Wembley. You know, if that's not an incentive for them, I think it's going to be a very, very tricky tie. I think United need to get the 2-0 as quickly as possible, because I think that's what's going to kill the momentum for Coventry. It's a big pitch, as we know, Wembley. So it's by no means a walkover. But that said, you know, all three teams that are in, all the other three teams in the semi-final would have wanted Coventry. So it is the lesser of the teams that are in there, but that makes them even more dangerous in my view, because if we take our eye off for a minute and they get a goal ahead, you know, it's we're not exactly fighters, are we? Unless we're playing Liverpool, which is something I don't really like to comment on, because I don't want us to become that type of a team that we're just looking forward to playing Liverpool every season, very similar to the way they were in the 90s and a lot of the 2000s as well. That was their season, you know, taking points off United. It's going to be a very tricky toy. Mark Robbins has got them well organised. I did watch their quarter-final game. They don't give up, and that's going to give them momentum, that is. You know, it really is. And they're coming into a semi-final where, you know, this is probably the only chance. I don't want to be disrespectful, but it's probably the only chance a lot of these players are going to get to an FA Cup final. I just feel that, you know, as you drop down the divisions, it means a lot more, the FA Cup, than teams in the Premier League, the majority of teams in the Premier League. For the supporters, for me especially, it's the one thing that I want to win every year. And obviously you want to win the league, but I just have that special connection with the FA Cup. I just, you know, it's one of the first games I ever seen with United at Brighton. It's just one of those things where it's like, it is, I believe it is coming back, but I think, I'm just not sure whether this current Manchester United team, a lot of these players know what it's like, you know, what it means to the fans to get to an FA Cup final. It's going to be difficult enough when we get through, but this is going to be a very tricky time. I do honestly believe we need to get the 2-0 as quickly as possible, if possible, to just kill them off. I think that's what will kill them off. But it's not going to be an easy game by any means. Like I said, a large pitch might help United. I am a little bit, you know, I definitely would have preferred someone like Johnny Evans, as Paul said, in there. We're just like, it's like a silent movie at the back these days. Wan-Bissaka doesn't talk, Dalot doesn't talk, Maguire, you know, just points and says things. It is a bit of a concern, but I do believe we'll win, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as you know, a Premier League playing a Championship team would be. We don't make things easy for ourselves, but we've got to get the 2-0 as quickly as possible.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll see how 11 individuals fare against the team next week. Worked out well for us so far, right? As you can tell by our beaming pessimism on the pod, thanks for everyone to watching and listening this week. Really appreciate it. Even managed to get there before Paul and Dave waltz out on me. They were threatening to do that by 10:51. I was going to be left here talking by myself, which I'm sure they would have enjoyed very much. We'll be back next week, guys. Stay safe, stay well, and thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.